I do not expect you to believe what I'm about to tell you. I should be mad to. But I'm not mad, and I've not been dreaming, so I shall simply tell you what happened without comment. From my childhood, I was noted for the gentleness of my disposition. I was especially fond of animals, and was indulged by my parents with a great variety of pets. I was never so happy as when feeding and caressing them. This characteristic remained with me as I grew older, and to those who have cherished an affection for a faithful dog, I need hardly bother to explain my feelings. I married early and was happy to find in my wife a disposition not uncongenial with my own. Observing my partiality for domestic pets, she lost no opportunity of procuring them. We had birds, a goldfish, a fine dog, rabbits, a small monkey, and a cat. The cat was a remarkably large and beautiful animal, entirely black and astonishingly clever. In speaking of his intelligence, my wife, who at heart was not a little tainted with superstition, frequently alluded to the ancient popular notion that all black cats were witches in disguise. Pluto, this was the cat's name, was my favorite pet. I alone fed him. He went with me wherever I went in the house. Our friendship lasted over several years, but during this time, I am sorry to tell you, my general temperament and character underwent a radical alteration for the worse. I grew day by day more moody, more irritable, more regardless of the feelings of others. I allowed myself to use intemperate language to my wife. At length, I even offered her personal violence. My pets, of course, were made to feel the change in my disposition. I not only neglected, but ill-used them. For Pluto, however, I still retained sufficient regard to restrain me from maltreating him. But my disease grew on me, and what disease is like alcohol? And at length, even Pluto, who was now becoming old, began to experience the effects of my ill temper. One night, returning home, much intoxicated from one of my haunts about town, I fancied that the cat avoided my presence. I seized him, and in his fright at my violence, he inflicted a slight wound on my hand with his teeth. The fury of a demon instantly possessed me. I did not know what I was doing. Another fiendish being seemed to have taken control of me. How can I tell you what happened next? And yet I must. I took a penknife from my waistcoat pocket, grasped the poor beast by the throat, and deliberately cut one of its eyes from the socket. When reason returned with the morning, when I had slept off the night's debauch, I experienced a sentiment half of horror, half of remorse for the crime I had been guilty of. But I again plunged into excess and soon drowned in wine all memory of the deed. In the meantime, the cat slowly recovered. The socket of the lost eye presented, it is true, a frightful appearance, but he no longer appeared to be suffering any pain. He went about the house as usual, but as might be expected, he fled in extreme terror at my approach. At first, I was grieved at this evident dislike on the part of a creature which had once so loved me, but this feeling soon gave way to irritation. One morning, in cold blood, I slipped a noose about its neck and hung it from the limb of a tree. I hung it with tears streaming from my eyes. I hung it because I knew it had loved me, because it had given me no cause for offense, because I knew that in doing so I was committing a deadly sin that would jeopardize my immortal soul. On the night following this cruel deed, I was aroused from sleep by the cry of fire The curtains around my bed were in flames. The whole house was blazing. It was with great difficulty that my wife, a servant, and myself made our escape. The destruction was complete. My entire worldly wealth was swallowed up. Now, I am not trying to establish a sequence of cause and effect between the disaster and the atrocity, but I am giving you a chain of events, and I do not wish to leave out even one link. On the day after the fire, I visited the ruins. The walls, with one exception, had fallen in. The exception was a wall, not very thick, which stood about the middle of the house and against which the head of my bed had rested. The plastering had here, in great measure, resisted the action of the fire, a fact which I attributed to its having been recently spread. About this wall, a dense crowd had gathered, and many of them seemed to be examining a particular portion of it. I approached and saw, as if graven in bas relief on the white surface, the figure of a gigantic cat. There was a rope about the animal's neck. When I first beheld it, my terror was extreme, but at length, reflection came to my aid. The cat, I remembered, had been hanged in the garden. On the alarm of fire, someone must have cut the animal down and thrown it through the open window, probably with the intention of arousing me from sleep. And when the other walls fell, the victim of my cruelty had been compressed into the freshly spread plaster, and the lime, together with the flames, had accomplished the portrait as I saw it. Although this accounted to my reason for the startling fact, it nevertheless made a deep impression on my mind. I could not rid myself of the image of the cat. I went so far as to regret the loss of the animal, and I began to look about me for another pet of the same species and of somewhat similar appearance with which to replace it. One night, as I sat half stupefied in one of my vile haunts, my attention was suddenly drawn to some black object resting on one of the immense hogsheads of gin or rum which constituted the chief furniture of the place. I approached it and touched it with my hand. It was a black cat, a very large one, fully as large as Pluto, and closely resembling him in every respect but one. Pluto did not have a white hair on his body, but this cat had a large white patch covering nearly the whole region of the breast. As I touched him, he got up, purred loudly, rubbed against my hand, and appeared delighted with my attention. This, then, was the very creature I was searching for. I at once offered to buy it from the landlord, but he made no claim to it, knew nothing of it, had never seen it before. I continued my caresses, and when I prepared to go home, the animal seemed to want to come with me. I let it do so, occasionally stopping and patting it as I proceeded. When it reached the house, it made itself comfortable at once, and immediately became a great favorite with my wife. As for me, I soon found a dislike for it arising within me. What added, no doubt, to my hatred of the beast was the discovery on the morning after I brought it home that, like Pluto, it also had been deprived of one of its eyes. This, however, only endeared it to my wife, who, as I have already said, possessed in high degree that humanity of feeling which had once been my distinguishing trait. With my aversion to this cat, however, its partiality for me seemed to increase. You cannot imagine with what pertinacity it followed me. Whenever I sat, it would crouch beneath my chair or spring upon my knees, covering me with its loathsome caresses. At such times, I longed to destroy it with one blow, and yet I was held back from doing so, partly by the memory of my former crime, but chiefly, I must confess it, by an absolute dread of the beast. This dread was not exactly a dread of physical evil, and yet I'm at a loss how else to define it. My wife had called my attention more than once to the character of the patch of white hair that I spoke of, and that constituted the only difference between this cat and the one I had destroyed. Although large, this white patch was originally very indefinite, but by slow degrees nearly imperceptible, and which for a long time my reason struggled to reject as fanciful, it had at length assumed a clear distinctness of outline. It was now the shape of an object I shuddered to name. And for this, above all, I loathed and dreaded and would have rid myself of the monster had I dared. It was now the very shape of the gallows. And now, neither by day or by night did I know the blessing of rest anymore. During the day, the creature did not leave me alone for a minute. Throughout the night, I started hourly from dreams of unutterable fear to find the hot breath of the beast upon my face and its vast weight resting eternally upon my heart. Beneath the pressure of torments such as these, the feeble remnant of good within me succumbed. Evil thoughts filled me. The moodiness of my usual temper increased to hatred of all things and all mankind. My uncomplaining wife was the usual and most patient sufferer from the sudden, frequent, and ungovernable outbursts of my fury. One day, she accompanied me on some household errand into the cellar. The cat followed me down the steep stairs and, nearly throwing me headlong, exasperated me into madness. Lifting up an axe and forgetting in my anger the dread which had hitherto held my hand, I aimed a blow at the animal. But my wife caught hold of my arm and prevented me from striking. And goaded by this interference into a demoniacal rage, I snatched my arm away and buried the axe in her skull. She fell dead on the spot. Faced with this hideous murder, I set myself forthwith, and with entire deliberation, to the task of concealing the body. After much deliberation, I determined to wall it up in the cellar, as the monks of the Middle Ages are recorded to have walled up their victims. The cellar walls were loosely constructed and had lately been plastered with rough plaster. Moreover, in one of the walls there was a projection caused by a false chimney that had been filled up and made to resemble the rest of the cellar. I was sure that I could easily displace the bricks at this point and insert the corpse and wall it up as before, so that no sign of anything suspicious remained. And so it proved. When I had finished my gruesome task, the wall did not have the slightest appearance of having been disturbed. My next step was to look for the beast which had been the cause of so much wretchedness, for I had at last firmly resolved to put it to death. But apparently the crafty animal had been alarmed at the violence of my anger and had made off. It is impossible to describe the blissful sense of relief that the absence of the detested creature gave me. That night I slept soundly, yes, slept, even with the burden of murder on my soul. The second and third day passed, and still my tormentor did not appear. Some few inquiries were made for my wife. Even a search started, but, of course, nothing was to be found. On the fourth day, a party of police came into the house and proceeded to make a rigorous investigation of the premises. They asked me to accompany them. They left no nook or corner unexplored. At length, for the third or fourth time, they descended into the cellar. I was undisturbed. I walked the cellar from end to end. The police were thoroughly satisfied and prepared to leave. The glee at my heart was too strong to be restrained. I burned to say just one word by way of triumph. As the party ascended the steps, I said, "Gentlemen, I'm delighted to have allayed your suspicions. By the by, gentlemen, this is a very well-constructed house. These walls, are you going, gentlemen? These walls are solidly put together. And here, through the mere frenzy of bravado, I rapped heavily with the cane I held in my hand on the very portion of the brickwork behind which rested the corpse of my wife. And then, horror upon horrors, from within the tomb, I was answered by a voice. It was a cry, at first muffled and broken, that quickly swelled into one long, continuous scream, utterly inhuman, a howl, a wailing shriek, half of horror, half of triumph. Fainting, I staggered to the opposite wall. For one instant, the party on the stairs remained motionless. In the next, a dozen arms were toiling at the wall. It fell bodily. The corpse stood erect before the eyes of the spectators. Upon its head, with red extended mouth and solitary eye of fire, sat the hideous beast whose craft had seduced me into murder and whose informing voice had consigned me to the hangman. I had walled up the monster within the tomb.